are listening to Co-op Radio 102.7 FM CFRO in Vancouver, Canada, broadcasting live from the downtown east side on unceded Coast Salish territory. Hello and welcome to Animal Voices. It's Friday, June 29th, and I'm your host, Alyssa Ray. I'm joined in studio by my co-host, Allison Cole.
Hello, hello.
Who's also on the controls, and Alon Cohen.
Hey there.
Thanks for joining me. We're also pleased to be graced by the presence of our tech trainee, Tim Aritz. Thanks for joining us. Animal Voices is Western Canada's only radio show dedicated solely to animal advocacy and compassionate living. We here at Animal Voices believe in a world in which non-human animals are granted the basic protection to be free from exploitation and suffering. On today's show, we feature a topic we haven't covered before, cockfighting. Joining us on the phone later in the show is Eric Sakic. He's a senior law enforcement specialist for the Animal Rescue Team of the Humane Society of the United States. He'll be speaking about the recent raid in California and also about the industry itself. I also got some information from the British Columbia Society for the Protection of Animals about Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, that is, about laws in BC and cockfighting in British Columbia. So I'll be sharing some of that as well. Today, Allison will be sharing her review of Mimi Kirk's cookbook, Live Raw, Raw Food Recipes for Good Health and Timeless Beauty. She just treated us to lunch from that cookbook, and we're excited. Our bellies are full, and we're excited to share our opinions on that. And I'll also be sharing the powerful speech that has gone viral over the last week. Philip Wallen presented as part of a recent debate event in Australia. In it, the philanthropist and former VP of Citibank argued very powerfully that animals should be kept off the menu. And I just checked on YouTube, and it's up over 43,000 views.
When was it posted online?
It was posted in May, so just over a month ago.
People are just starting to see it now, I think.
It really exploded over the last week. So I just want to share that in its entirety because I love it. So to kick off the show, I kind of want to start... I thought it would be interesting to just sort of check in with my co-hosts about sort of what's new and what we've been doing and what's on our minds. We haven't kind of done that in a while. First, Allison, I know you completed your charity run. Can you tell us about how that went?
Oh, it went really well. As I said last week, it was the first time that I'd ever participated in a formal running event where there's like almost 1,000 people running around me. More than that, actually, because there was the half marathon, too. I did the 5K. We had a group of 17 people for Vancouver Humane Society. We were called the Chicken Runners. Some people wore funky chicken hats, so we were easily visible. And yeah, it was a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed it. And we raised over $25,000 on behalf of Vancouver Humane Society. I think we came in, actually, we were around number three out of all the charities that were running for their specific causes in that. So
wow.
Money's going towards a very good cause, obviously. And yeah, it was a really nice running day. It was perfect weather. Couldn't have asked for better weather, not raining like it is today. Yeah, it was great, and I will definitely do it again next year.
Awesome. That's really inspiring. That is a huge number, $25,000. Awesome. I saw that guest that we've featured on the show, Rebecca Breeder, a local animal rights lawyer.
She raised over $7,000. I said, how do you raise that money? So she's got a lot of good contacts.
Yeah, awesome. That's really exciting. Let's see. What did I do? I went for a walk with a dog. That was like really exciting for me.
That's animal related.
It was like, well, I don't have animals in my life,
that's
really,
actually awesome.
Other than humans. So I just spent an hour at this amazing lake with just this one dog, just me and Millie, and we had an amazing time, and it just really, really grounded me and made me just so happy, and I was so happy to spend that time with her because she was going to be left in the truck for 2 hours. So that was good and very small, but made a difference to my life. Alon, what's new with you and what's on your mind?
I've been a bit emotionally overwhelmed this week. 2 days ago, actually, police arrested 7 more protesters at the Vancouver Art Gallery in part of kind of the ongoing series of Vancouver casseroles. I don't know if you're familiar with the casseroles, Alyssa, but...
A little bit. I have kind of a general knowledge, yeah. But please enlighten
us. Yeah, definitely. There are solidarity marches with the tuition hikes and austerity measures that are being imposed on Quebec students and, of course, on the Quebecois in general, and kind of in response to Bill 78, which is a bill which obviously denies essentially the freedom to protest in Quebec. So there's been an ongoing series of protesting in Vancouver in solidarity with us, and of course regarding tuition hikes and austerity measures going on in BC, which has been an ongoing series. But recently, what happened a couple of days ago, one of the sergeants, his name is actually Sergeant Ken Athens. Mm-hmm. He's in the crowd control unit of the VPD. He actually went to Montreal to study police tactics there. And of course, keep in mind that the Bill 78 in Quebec is actually being condemned by the UN. So we have police in BC going to Quebec to study from police in Montreal about their laws, the laws that are being condemned by the UN. And then when they come back, they start arresting protesters at what has been often, you know, arrests happen every now and then in Vancouver. But the fact that it seems to me there's been an escalation of this, the fact that arrests happened at the Vancouver Art Gallery. One woman had her arm, had her hand broken by the police. Seven people were arrested. Two of them were merely arrested for asking for police badges, and there was an escalation. So we see a lot of suppression going on. This is obviously very scary stuff, mm-hmm. Especially the fact alongside that, you know, a couple months ago, essentially the Harper government labeled environmental and animal activists as eco-terrorists and terrorist groups. So we see kind of an increase in police repression, and it's kind of scary stuff going on here.
Yeah, I saw actually an article in the Province today, an op-ed by Ethan Barron that was called "They Doth Protest Too Much. Cops Need to Back Off Peaceful Protests." And he highlighted Section 2 of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, which guarantees the right to peaceful assembly. So I don't understand. Aren't these crackdowns just against the charter?
Like, yeah, it seems so. I think what's very significant, though, to point out is that the fact that we have police spending money, obviously taxpayer money, going to Montreal to learn from police there instead of, you know, and so there's a national coordination, and instead of, you know, doing things like looking for missing women in the downtown east side and trying to coordinate, you know, between the RCMP and the Vancouver police and these kind of areas, we have Vancouver police flying to Montreal to learn about repressive tactics that have been condemned by the UN. So it just seems to be like an increasing tactics of repression and suppression. If this isn't the criminalization of dissent, I don't know what is. And it's it really scares me to be going out. Of course, you know, I plan to do traveling in my future and going abroad to do studying. And of course, the fact that, you know, I'm afraid to go out and protest because I may be charged with something like obstruction of justice, which is a very vague charge.
That's an easy one to charge someone with.
Definitely. So it's very scary times coming about in Canada and now in Vancouver specifically.
Worse in the States, though.
Yeah, I read that even that there was just a group of people at the art gallery just like sitting in a circle, and like then just kind of cops kind of moved in and... I don't know. Yeah, that is really disturbing.
Yeah, I don't know, Allison, if I would say it's worse than the States. I think there's a specific...
Yeah, the ag gag law there.
It's true, but I think there's a specific now move within Canadian politics, especially given the student movement in Quebec, that has become highly repressive. And I think it's, you know, I don't think, you know, we can claim that Canada is this peaceful country anymore, you know, more peaceful than the U.S. is kind of this, you know, stereotype that Canadians have. I don't think that exists anymore, if it ever really has ever existed.
Yeah, especially, yeah, with Harper at the helm, it's just going into this really, really destructive regime. Sorry about that, I just hit the mic. Allison, I wonder if you have some upcoming events, maybe.
Well, actually, I do. Funny that you asked here. So we actually have a lot of upcoming events coming up in Vancouver this coming week. Firstly and foremostly, this Sunday is our national holiday. It's Canada Day on Sunday, July 1st. And we've got a couple events happening on Sunday that have to do with the animals. So on Sunday, July 1st, from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., our vegan store locally here in Lower Mainland, Carmivore, is having their third birthday, and they're having a birthday celebration. So that's happening at the Carmivore Vegan Store at 610 Columbia Street in New Westminster. You can join Carmivore on Canada Day for their third birthday celebration. They will be giving out a free custom cupcake or soft serve to every customer, as well as free samples and promotions from some of their favorite local and vegan vendors. And a gift card promotion will also be available for this day only, which will entail a $75 gift card available for purchase for only $50. Also on Sunday, July 1st, and I wish I was able to go to this. This is happening in Victoria from 12 to 6 p.m. It's Victoria's very first ever Vegan Fest. And this is happening at Market Square in Victoria, which I actually went to for the first time last month. And it happens to house the vegan restaurant Green Cuisine, which I went to. And actually, Sarah Kramer's store, Sarah's Place, the vegan curio shop, is just around the corner. So the first annual Victoria Vegan Festival is a showcase of the vegan lifestyle, welcoming all from the curious to the longtime vegan, taking place July 1st at Market Square in the heart of downtown Victoria. This free, fun, family-friendly event will feature speakers, entertainers, businesses, and nonprofit groups, and you can expect numerous delicious vegan food samples as well. Come out and find how you can help make a difference in your health, the environment, and the love of animals. It's amazing what a few small changes three times a day can do. So there's going to be a host of speakers at this day-long event, which include our own Vicento Molina. She's a vegan dietitian based here in the Lower Mainland. Brianna Clark Grogan will be doing, I believe she's doing a cooking demo of her vegan butter, which does not contain palm oil, and she is also a local vegan cookbook author who lives on Denman Island. Leslie Fox from the Fur Bearer Defenders here in Vancouver, and Sarah Kramer herself, who is one of the organizers of this event, will be presenting a game show called Canada's Next Top Vegan. A story on this event was actually on the CTV News this week, so that made big headlines, and I was just actually had the news on the TV while I was in the kitchen making you guys some food, and I saw that on there, so that was awesome. Thursday, July 5th from 7 to 9 p.m., the local nonprofit organization Stop UBC Animal Research will be having a meeting in Vegan Potluck. This is happening at 1656 Adenac Street. Their July meeting is a critical one. They'll be making plans for future actions for the summer and fall, fundraisers, outreach, and much more. This meeting is very important, so they ask that you please be there if you want to help out and find more. So bring vegan food and drink to the potluck and bring your own cup so they don't have to waste paper or plastic. And they would like you to RSVP so that they know how many people will be attending, and invite your friends, they say. You can RSVP on Facebook. So if you just look up Stop UBC Animal Research, their Facebook page there, it'll be listed as an event. Now, I was excited to find out about this. On Saturday, July the 7th and July 8th, that's next weekend, from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m., there's going to be another book sale extravaganza fundraiser happening at Fairy Cakes. It's a newish vegan cupcake store in Vancouver at 3586 Fraser Street. They had a book sale fundraiser not too long ago, and I missed that. I really wanted to donate some books to that, so I have my chance this time. So apparently the first book sale was so much fun that they decided to do it all over again. Fairy Cakes and Small Animal Rescue Society have once again teamed up to bring you their book sale fundraiser extravaganza. Two, the book sale, as I said, will be on both Saturday and Sunday next week. 100% of the proceeds will go to the Small Animal Rescue Society of BC. Your donations of used and new books will be greatly appreciated, and they can be dropped off at Fairy Cakes. So once again, that's 3586 Fraser Street in Vancouver. What kinds of books, you might ask? Kids books, adult books, cookbooks, do-it-yourself books, fiction books, fantasy books, nonfiction books, sci-fi books, history books, 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 books. And I've asked them if we can donate magazines too, because I have a lot of magazines to donate. So the prices will be great and the cause is fantastic. Please invite all your friends. If you have an animal-friendly event that you would like to have announced on the show, please email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, or you can post it on our Facebook page, which is Animal Voices Vancouver. And I think it's my turn again.
It's your turn, Allison. We would like to know what you thought about the Live Raw Cookbook And please tell us what you just put in our bellies, because that made them vibrate with happiness.
I'm full. I love it when a book is so inspiring and useful that it becomes your go-to reference for daily living on a regular basis. And this is what the book Live Raw, Raw Food Recipes for Good Health and Timeless Beauty by Mimi Kirk has become for me. If the name sounds familiar to you and you're plugged into the veg celeb scene, you'll recognize Mimi Kirk as having won the esteemed title of Sexiest Vegetarian Woman Over 50 in PETA's 2009 annual nationwide Sexiest Vegetarian Contest. The secret to her beauty, a living foods plant-based diet, she claims, and I have no doubts that this is true. After winning this title several years ago, people were asking her to share her secrets to good health, and so this book was born, which is not just a collection of delicious raw vegan recipes, but also happens to be what I consider an illuminating prescription for life. Eating good, healthy food and food that doesn't harm animals is so much more than just a dietary regime. It can be spiritual and enlightening to your soul. You feel so much better about the way that you're living, true to your beliefs, and this translates into your physical well-being and your interaction with those around you in your life. Mimi Kirk imbues these values into her own life, and she shares these well-worn treasures of advice with her readers. For example, as a prelude to the recipes in the book, I love her 29 tips for staying young at any age, which includes advice about stress, getting enough sleep, meditation, and being genuine, honest, kind, and ethical. Her thoughts on these matters are genuine and from the heart, and being that she has led a very accomplished and fulfilling life, it's easy to take in what she says with trust and acceptance. So now on to the food. Yes, this book shares a generous collection of Mimi's delicious raw recipes, ranging from the simple to the very gourmet and complex. Her audience is presumably made up of mainly newbies of this type of food, food preparation and lifestyle, as I will call it. So it presents a challenge, but yet an encouraging challenge, I will say, to go forth and create an array of this fresh and inviting nourishment. Uncooked, unprocessed, and in its most natural state, Mimi says she has chosen to eat organic, raw, vegan food because of her compassion for animals and its health benefits, known to have more nutrition than conventionally grown food, as well as fewer chemicals and carcinogens than packaged foods or animal products too, of course. For the past months, I've been adventurously trying out many of the recipes in this book. I've been doing what I can without a dehydrator, which, unfortunately for me, many of the recipes in this book require. But even without this expensive gadget, I've been able to make a lot of the foods in this book. My almost daily regimen has included her Power Greens juice, which is a green juice consisting of apple, celery, cucumber, fennel, spinach, romaine, kale, ginger, and lemon. And not only is it a delicious concoction of veggies and fruit in one glass, but I feel like I'm doing my body a world of good whenever I take in one of these drinks. Just think of the powerhouse of nutrients you're ingesting with all that plant-based goodness. It was this recipe that actually thrust me into the act of juicing, and I thank Mimi for that. This is just one example of how this book can introduce you to new methods of making your own fresh foods due to Mimi's encouraging language and tone that would normally be intimidating or not even on your radar of something to do. In fact, this is how I finally learned how to make my own almond milk from this book, and I'm delighted to say that it happens to be really, really easy, not to mention satisfying to make. This book includes recipes for many different types of raw vegan foods, such as drinks, breads, and crackers, spreads, salads, soups, desserts, and main courses as well. My only complaint would be that there are some typos and accidental ingredient omissions in the pages, and sometimes the recipes direct the users to sort of decide for themselves how much of one ingredient to add to a dish according to taste, which is maybe too lenient for those of us who are brand new to this way of food preparation and just want to know exactly how to execute the recipe step by step. So I just want to briefly get your opinion on the dishes that I made. We had a raw lasagna, we had the power greens juice, we had a spinach salad with an orange vinaigrette dressing, and the chocolate caramel bars. And first I wanted to get Tim's take, because I consider him to be our raw food specialist of the four of us, since he happens to work and make this food at one of our premier raw establishments in town, Gorilla Food. So tell me, Tim, what did you think of the food?
It was really, really yummy. Especially the lasagna, I think, was really good.
First time tasting it was today with you, and I was impressed.
I was impressed. I would love to make that at home as well. Yeah, and the salad was really good as well, and the juice, as you said, it's gives you energy for the day. It's really amazing. The dessert was, what was it again, the chocolate?
Chocolate caramel is a four-layer chocolate caramel bar with which I made my own chocolate, a layer of peanut butter sugary goodness, a layer of walnut date sugary goodness. It's very strong.
I think that was maybe too many layers for me.
But small pieces.
But yeah, in small pieces, it's...
Okay.
Really good.
Well, thank you. In conclusion, I want to be Mimi Kirk. She is a glowing role model for a compassionate and healthy lifestyle as far as anyone can get. And if you follow the recipes and advice in her book, any aspiration to lead a life as vibrant and healthy as she does is within your tenable grasp.
I heard this really great story on Sunday night.
Oh, really? Where?
On Co-op Radio.
Well, tell me about it.
Well, I was getting ready for bed, listening to the radio, and this woman's story just caught my attention. It reminded me so much of myself. I just had to stand there and listen.
Oh, wow. What show was it on?
Oh, the storytelling show. It's on every Sunday at 9 o'clock.
I'll have to check that out.
Everyone should listen to the storytelling show. Sundays at 9 on CFRO Co-op Radio. 102.7 FM.
Well, apparently I wasn't the only one who got shivers listening to Australian philanthropist and former vice president of Citibank, Philip Wallin, as he wowed the crowd with a speech which he presented at the St. James Ethics and Wheeler Centre debate in Australia in May. It was called Intelligence Squared, and he argued that animals should be off the menu. And it ended up over the course of the debate that that side won, and I think it was in large part due to Philip's amazing speech. You've probably heard it already. It's been posted and reposted by countless animal advocates, but I want to play it here in its entirety because it's really just that good. A bit of background. Philip was vice president of Citibank, specializing in corporate finance, mergers, and acquisitions. At age 34, he was rated Australian Business Magazine. He was rated by them in their top 40 Australian headhunted executives. At age 40, he witnessed cruelty on such a colossal scale that it affected him profoundly. He decided to give away everything he owned and leave that lifestyle behind. Today, he devotes his life to children, animals, and the environment. Terminally ill, the homeless, and the arts. He supports over 500 humanitarian projects in over 40 countries with schools, orphanages, shelters, sanctuaries, clinics, and scholarships. In 2005, he received the Order of Australia. In 2007, he was Australian of the Year, Victoria. The Australia Day Council said of him, "Essentially a private man, Philip Wallin seeks no personal publicity, but is not afraid to step into the limelight for a just cause." And here's his speech.
On behalf of St. James Ethics Centre, the Wheeler Centre, the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, The Age, the City of Melbourne and the ABC, all of whom have worked together to make this event possible, I'd like to welcome Philip Wallin. King Lear, late at night on the cliffs, asks the blind Earl of Gloucester, "How do you see the world?" And the blind man Gloucester replies, "I see it feelingly." And shouldn't we all? Animals must be off the menu because tonight they are screaming in terror in the slaughterhouses, in crates and in cages. Vile, ignoble gulags of despair. You see, I heard the screams of my dying father as his body was ravaged by the cancer that killed him. And I realized I'd heard those screams before. In the slaughterhouse, their eyes stabbed out and their tendons slashed, on the cattle ships to the Middle East, and the dying mother whale as a harpoon explodes in her brain as she calls out to her calf. Their cries were the cries of my father. And I discovered that when we suffer as equals. And in their capacity to suffer, a dog is a pig, is a bear, is a boy. Meat today is the new asbestos, more murderous than tobacco. CO2, methane, and nitrous oxide from the livestock industry are killing our oceans with acidic, hypoxic dead zones. 90% of small fish are ground up into pellets to feed to livestock. Vegetarian cows today are the world's largest ocean predators. The oceans are dying in our time. By 2048, all our fisheries will be dead, the lungs and the arteries of the earth. Billions of bouncy little chicks are ground up alive simply because they are male. Only 100 billion people have ever lived. 7 billion people live today. And yet we torture and kill 2 billion sentient living beings every week. 10,000 entire species are wiped out every year because of the actions of one. And we are now facing the 6th mass extinction in cosmological history. If any other organism did this, a biologist would call them a virus. It is a crime against humanity of unimaginable proportions. But happily, the world is changing. 10 years ago, Twitter was a bird sound. WWW was a stuck keyboard. Cloud was in the sky. 4G was a parking space. Google was a baby's burp. Skype was a typo. And Al-Qaeda was my plumber. Victor Hugo said, "There is nothing more powerful than an idea whose time has come." Well, animal rights today is now the greatest social justice issue since the abolition of slavery. Do you know there are over 600 million vegetarians in this world, and that is bigger than the United States, England, France, Germany, Spain, Italy, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, all put together. If we were one nation, we would be bigger than the 27 nations of the European Union. Can you believe that? And despite this massive demographic footprint, we are still drowned out by the raucous hunt and shoot and killing cartels who believe that violence is the answer when it should not even be a question. Meat kills animals, kills us, and is killing our economies. Medicare has already bankrupted the United States. They will need $8 trillion invested in treasury bills just to pay the interest, and they have precisely zero. They could shut down every school, Army, Navy, Air Force, Homeland Security, Marines, CIA, and FBI, and they still will not have the money to pay their doctor bills. And our Cornell and Harvard say that the optimum amount of meat in a healthy human diet is precisely zero. Water, as you know, is the new oil. Nations will soon be going to war for it. Underground aquifers that took millions of years to fill are now running dry. It takes 50,000 liters of precious drinking water to make 1 kilo of beef. Today, 1 billion people are hungry. 20 million people will die from malnutrition. Cutting meat by only 10% will feed 100 million people. And eliminating meat will end starvation forever. If everyone ate a Western diet, we would need 2 planet Earths to feed us. We've only got one, and she is dying. Greenhouse gas emissions from livestock is 50% greater than transport, as Peter said. Cars, trains, buses, ships, lorries, the whole lot. And as I travel around the world, I see poor countries who sell their grain to the West while their own children starve in their arms, and the West feeds it to livestock so we can eat a steak? Am I the only one who sees this as a crime? Believe me, every morsel of meat we eat is slapping the tear-stained face of a hungry child. When I look into her eyes, do I remain silent? The earth can produce enough food for everyone's need, but not enough for everyone's greed. We are facing the perfect storm. If any nation had developed weapons that could wreak such havoc on the planet, we would launch a preemptive military strike and bomb it back into the Bronze Age. But it's not a rogue state, it's an industry. The good news is we don't have to bomb it. We can just stop buying it. Sir George Bush was wrong. The axis of evil does not run through Iraq, Iran, or North Korea. It runs through our dining tables. Weapons of mass destruction are our knives and forks. Our proposition is the Swiss Army knife of the future. It solves our environmental, water, human health problems, and ends cruelty forever. The Stone Age didn't end because we ran out of stones. This cruel, disgusting industry will end because we run out of excuses. Meat is like the 1 and 2 cent coins. It costs more to make than it's worth. And I come from the bush. Farmers are the ones with the most to gain. Farming won't end, it would boom. Only the product line will change. Farmers would make so much money, they won't even bother counting it, and I'd be the first to applaud them. Governments would love us. New industries would emerge and flourish. Health insurance premiums would plummet. Hospital waiting lists would disappear. Hell, we'd be so healthy, we'd have to shoot someone just to start a cemetery. So tonight I have two challenges for the opposition. Two challenges. Meat causes a wide range of cancers and heart disease. Would they name one disease caused by a vegetarian diet? And two, I'm funding the Earthlings trilogy. If the opposition is so sure of their ground, I challenge them to send a copy of the Earthlings DVD to all their colleagues and all their customers. Go on, I dare you. Animals are not just other species, they are other nations, and we murder them at our peril. The peace map is drawn on a menu. Peace is not just the absence of war, it is the presence of justice. Justice must be blind to race, color, religion, or species. If she's not blind, she will be a weapon of terror. And tonight, there is unimaginable terror in those ghastly Guantanamos we call factory farms or slaughterhouses. Believe me, if slaughterhouses had glass walls, we wouldn't be having this debate tonight. You see, I believe another world is possible. And on a quiet night, I can hear her breathing. Let's get animals off the menu and out of these torture chambers. Please vote tonight for those who have no voice. Thank you.
That was Philip Volin, and you're listening to Animal Voices on CFRO 102.7 FM, Vancouver's cooperative radio station, broadcasting live from the downtown east side on unceded Coast Salish territory. And here are your headlines for Friday, June 29th, 2012. Some good news. Burnaby City Council took steps this week to ban shark fin soup and join a growing number of Metro Vancouver municipalities eager to stop the sale of the controversial delicacy. The council passed a motion asking city staff for guidance in pursuing the prohibition of shark fin use after more than 60 people packed council chambers in support of a Vancouver Animal Defense League presentation. The motion proposed for researching ways that the council could engage the federal and provincial governments on the matter and develop an enforceable ban. VADL spokesman Anthony Marr, who may sound familiar as he was on the show last week, said that he grew up eating the soup but never thought about its impacts. He said harvesters tear the fins from the shark's bodies before releasing them back into the ocean, where they can no longer swim or hunt. As the apex predator's numbers dwindle, lower level predators will proliferate and reduce the number of fish. And so by getting smaller communities on board first, Marr hopes to convince councils of the bigger Metro Vancouver cities to simultaneously sign on to a ban and diffuse concerns that affected restaurateurs will flee Vancouver for Richmond or vice versa. He claims plenty of allies in the Chinese community who agree it's time to end a barbaric practice responsible for the slaughter of about 50 million sharks annually. But he doesn't try to convert restaurateurs or their rich clientele who see shark fin as a prestigious delicacy. Rather, of course, he goes for the councils, as we've seen, and this has been a very successful strategy. He figures sharks will be extinct by the time they come around or are replaced by younger, more enlightened generations of Chinese heritage. And so, of course, for him, the time is stacked now. I don't know what you think about this, Alyssa, but I'm actually very excited about the story. First of all, it shows to me, you know, being an animal advocate, I always shy away from, perhaps you can say it, going off the cultures or communities that I don't participate in. And which is important, right? Because doing so has echoes of a kind of neo-imperialist touch to it. You know, having, of course, like white male people going to Chinese communities and telling them what to do, of course. And of course, these communities, it seems to me that the goal of kind of allies and activists in this should be showing solidarity and support for our comrades who are doing this kind of work in their own communities.
You're speaking specifically
of Anthony Ma, who is himself part of the, of course, the Chinese community, and comes out of it.
And Claudia Lee, I guess, what's her group called? The Shark Truth, based in Vancouver as well. She's an outstanding advocate. And yeah, we need to show those groups support. Yeah, I totally agree.
And of course, we should always focus on our own communities and show support and solidarity for other people engaging in their own communities, which is something we always need to keep in mind, because it seems almost at times somewhat trendy to attack other nations or other countries or other communities while there's havoc and, of course, lots of egregious slaughtering going on in our own communities that we should focus on a local level. The next piece of good news is that on July 1st, California is posed to become the first state in the U.S. to ban foie gras. The ban was actually passed in 2004 with more than a seven-year grace period to give California's only producer time to implement reforms and figure out a way to produce the dreadful delicacy without force-feeding ducks and geese. However, the producer didn't achieve either goal, and now, of course, the time is up, and so they're going to be going out of business, one could say. Of course, the birds that are raised for this are force-fed up to 2 kilograms of grain and fat a day through a tube that is shoved down their throats, a process that one of the Californian politicians has described as the equivalent of waterboarding. And of course, force-feeding birds has been denounced by every expert in the field of poultry welfare. The scientific consensus is so strong that the production has actually been banned in 17 countries. So this is, of course, rather good news to hear that California will be finally phasing out its attempt to allow the meat industry to continue this practice, and of course say finally that no, this isn't acceptable anymore. And that has been your news for, or rather your headlines for Friday, June 29th, 2012.
Thank you so much, Elon. Now we're going to turn to our feature interview today. Shortly, we will have Eric Sakic on the line, and we're going to be covering a topic that we haven't covered before, and one that I'm personally pretty curious about. I've heard a lot more about dog fighting than I have about rooster fighting, or cock fighting as it's known, and it boggles my mind just how widespread this activity is. It's estimated that worldwide cock fighting is a $1 billion a year underground industry. So Eric Sakic will be on the phone with us shortly, and he's a senior law enforcement specialist for the Animal Rescue Team of the Humane Society of the United States. He's been working on investigations and animal cruelty actions and for about 33 years, and we're excited to have him on the show today, and he's going to shed some light on the practice of cockfighting and on a recent investigation and raid that took place in California that was that Humane Society of the United States helped with. Welcome to Animal Voices, Eric, and thanks for joining us today. Okay, so firstly, for those who don't know, I wanted to touch on just what cockfighting is. Can you just paint a general picture for us of what's involved?
Sure. Well, cockfighting is actually a centuries-old blood sport. Dates back at least 3,000 years. generally involves two or more specially bred birds known as gamecocks being placed in an enclosure to fight. This is done for the primary purpose of gambling and a sixth sense of entertainment. The activity itself usually results in the death of one, sometimes both of the birds. These types of fights can last anywhere from several minutes to more than half an hour. The birds that are used for these sorts of events, even those that don't die, suffer tremendously in a cockfight. The birds really can't escape from the fight regardless of how injured or exhausted they become. The injuries that they suffer include such things as punctured lungs, broken bones, pierced eyes, gaping wounds. And that's because the bird's legs are usually fitted with a razor-sharp blade or implement called a slasher, or in other cases, a curved ice pick long type of weapon called a gaff. And all of those weapons are designed to puncture and mutilate.
Wow, that sounds really, really violent. What happens to the birds that lose? Are they given medical care or?
Well, depending on what type of event, whether it involves knives or gas, frequently there is a survivor with a gas style of fighting. That's the implement looks like a curved ice pick. And often at the more established pits, you'll see somebody there sewing birds up. Without benefit of anesthesia or anything like that. And that's only so they can prolong the bird's life so that they can use it later on for another fight or possibly for breeding purposes if it's been a consistent winner. In many cases, though, the birds are simply treated like trash. It's not unusual for us to find garbage cans or burn barrels or dead pits full of that evening's or that weekend's losers. In one case here in Sacramento, during a raid on a fight in progress, we actually found a dead pit that was full of birds, and we noticed that some of the birds were still moving, and as we started pulling birds out of this hole in the ground, we found birds that had been literally tossed in to be buried alive.
Oh, wow. So, I know that this happens kind of all around the world. Can you give us a picture of sort of where it's most popular and around the world and in the U.S.? Where does this go on?
It goes on virtually in all parts of the world, even in those countries that have deemed it illegal. First, in the United States, it is an illegal activity dating back to the early 1800s. The first state to outlaw cockfighting in the U.S., was Massachusetts in 1836, and most of the older states followed soon thereafter. Today, cockfighting is illegal in all 50 states. It's a felony crime in 40 states and a misdemeanor in the remainder. And of course, we'd like to see those remaining 10 states go felony as well. In addition, in the U.S., the federal law makes it a federal felony to move the birds in interstate or foreign commerce for the purposes of fighting. And it also applies to the movement, interstate foreign commerce, of any of the implements known as gaffs or slashers. And the penalties for that include a fine of up to $250,000 and 5 years in a federal penitentiary.
Oh, wow. That's really tough. Was that a recent act that went through?
I'm sorry?
Has that been around for a while? That sounds like a really tough penalty.
That penalty has been in place since 2007.
Yeah, wow. Just for our Canadian listeners, I just wanted to give a bit of context. I asked our local British Columbia SPCA if cockfighting goes on in our province, and a spokesperson said that it certainly does, and they have executed a number of warrants for cockfighting. They found individuals that they've been investigating primarily within the Filipino community. There's been no links found yet to organized crime. And there are other investigations sort of ongoing. And there's been a couple big busts in BC in 2006 and 2008 in Burnaby and Surrey, but at the time our laws weren't very tough. But yeah, just to give the context, as of May 2011, our laws in BC got way tougher, and they're actually the toughest in Canada now. It's illegal now to breed, raise, or train an animal for the purpose of baiting and fighting, and also it's illegal to possess the equipment as well, which is, I think, really important, with fines up to $75,000 and 2-year imprisonment. So it's just for our Canadian listeners. So you're based out of California, is that right? So is it a felony where you are, Eric?
Unfortunately, in California, it's still a misdemeanor until your second or subsequent offense, and then it becomes a felony crime. But I also want to congratulate Canada and especially British Columbia for their proactive stance on this. I've testified twice now in Canada, both in British Columbia and in Alberta, in cockfighting cases, and that was back when the laws were much less stringent. And Canada has a bit of a history with respect to this sort of activity, and
Sorry, you were saying that Canada has, or you were applauding us, and you've helped with a couple of cases here in BC?
Yes, one in Burnaby and another one in Alberta.
Yeah.
And those were both when the law was less stringent, so I'm very pleased to see Canada's proactive legislative approach.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, especially here in BC, but most of the provinces, unfortunately, do not have their own laws. The criminal code in Canada prohibits cockfighting and cockpits, but the paraphernalia and the raising of the birds isn't illegal, which I think is similar to the U.S. Federal law. Is that right?
It's somewhat similar.
Yeah.
But your law also addresses spectators, which is a good thing.
Yeah. So I just want to bring it back to the birds for a second here before we get to the recent raids in California. Can you tell us what's involved in raising these roosters for fighting? What sort of practices and cruelty do we find there?
Well, I think most people, when they see one of these operations, they're a bit nonplussed. Frequently, the first thing they're going to notice is that there are a lot of male birds, roosters, usually staked out next to an A-frame type of shelter or a barrel-type shelter. Gamefowl, especially gamecocks, are most often dubbed and trimmed prior to their being used for fighting. That means the comb, wattles, and earlobes are surgically removed. And I don't want to suggest that that's done by a veterinarian. It's not. It's usually a home job where somebody just throws the bird over their leg and they take a pair of shears and cut these appendages off, again, without benefit of anesthesia. It's a fairly painful operation. After the bird has reached adulthood, which is generally about a year to 14 months, if they're going to be used for fighting, they're referred to as battle cocks. And we tend to see conditions for battle cocks ranging everywhere from very good care to very bad care. And again, we need to look at the fact that this is a gambling activity, so at least half of the characters involved are losing consistently. And often what we start to see there is deteriorating conditions for the birds. So while some people might argue that these birds receive very good care, say in comparison to a bird that's being raised for eggs or for meat production, it really is a poor argument, because the end result for these birds is that they're going to be used repeatedly for a fighting exhibition in which razor-sharp knives or sharp gaffs are placed on their legs so that they can mutilate and kill another bird in a very brutal, horrific type of event. And this is done really for, as I say, a sick sense of entertainment, people who enjoy watching animals suffer, as well as the gambling. And the gambling has always been the primary attractant. Even way back in the days of the early ancient Romans, whose gambling activity surrounding cockfighting led the Roman agricultural writer Columella to complain that devotees of the sport frequently lost entire inheritances betting at the side of a cockpit.
Can you tell us what happens after to the birds after a fighting ring is busted?
Well, any raid that we would be involved with, if it's a fight in progress, we of course are going to want to have those birds that are injured examined by a veterinarian and any treatments that are indicated given as quickly as possible. In many cases, the injuries are so severe that the birds have to be euthanized. Those birds will, of course, be kept as evidence in that regard. Mm-hmm. When a case is disposed of, that is, it's gone through the legal system and there are convictions, typically the roosters are going to be euthanized. That's generally on order of the court. It's very difficult to find homes or sanctuaries for seized gamecocks. Most farmers don't want them because they're so highly aggressive that they would kill any other birds that they have on their property. We have had some success in rehoming game fowl hens to sanctuaries, but even those are far and few between. It's important to understand the size of some of these operations in which not only hundreds, but sometimes thousands of birds are present. And since a rooster can have a lifespan of upwards of 12 years, it's a very, very expensive proposition, to try to find a place to put even an individual rooster without any guarantee or success in rehabilitating that animal.
Yeah.
It's a very difficult process for all of us in that regard.
Yeah, I can understand the challenges there. I did see an article on United Poultry Concerns website about rehabilitation of the birds, but I can imagine that there's not many places that are equipped at this time, and there's just...
There simply aren't enough.
Yeah. Can you tell us a bit about what some of the major challenges you're faced in trying to bring down these cockfighting rings?
Well, there are a few. The investigation of any animal fighting activity, whether it's dog fighting or cock fighting, is frequently difficult. It's frustrating. Many of the investigations are unsuccessful, and that's because the circumstances that are beyond the control of the investigating agency. We have to understand first that these are highly specialized criminal activities, and the participants are often scattered over wide areas involving multiple jurisdictions. The broad distribution of the participants presents certain difficulties unless these investigations are tightly coordinated among a number of law enforcement agencies, everything from whether it's state police or local sheriff's department, animal services agencies. And once they start going outside of those jurisdictions, then you have to bring another agency in. In addition, the time period between the staged fights, not the training, but the stage fights, is frequently uneventful. That can present problems for investigators. In many cases, it becomes difficult to justify an investigation because little or no activity is observed to confirm active involvement in the enterprise. That additional time also allows participants the time to scrutinize newcomers, identify investigators, since many of them are in positions that make them somewhat visible to the public. The more organized fighters, what you might call paying participants, there have been cases where they've attempted to bribe public officials. They frequently are conducting counter-surveillance on law enforcement facilities. Mm-hmm. We've even found some investigations have revealed that they've maintained dossiers on identified law enforcement agencies. Mm-hmm. So these are just some of the things that make these sorts of cases very difficult.
Yeah. I can imagine. I think you would agree that laws like banning paraphernalia and limiting the number of roosters on a property or something maybe would help to combat these cockfighting rings. Unfortunately, we don't have much time to highlight the raid recently in Visalia, California, but we do have the video on our website produced by the Humane Society of the United States. So if our listeners are interested, please check it out. I have to wrap it up with you, Eric. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us and telling us about cockfighting.
It's been a pleasure talking with you, even though this is a terrible subject. And again, congratulations to Canada and British Columbia specifically on its upgrading of its laws.
Awesome. Thanks, Eric. Take care. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Animal Voices radio show here on 102.7 FM CFRO in Vancouver, Canada. So next week, on next week's show, we're going to be featuring Janice Gareko, who is a sports nutritionist. She's going to be speaking with us about vegan sports nutrition. Coming up on the show now, we have Radio Shock with Alex Smith. Thank you for listening, and remember to be kind to the animals.
Up in Canada, they can balance and they can climb like their fathers before them. They'll walk the girders of the Manhattan skyline. Shine your light on me, Miss Liberty, because as soon as this ferry boat docks, I'm headed to the church to play bingo. My cool at poker, but I'm a fool when love's at stake, because I can't conceal emotion. What I'm feeling's always written on my face. There's a gypsy down on Bleecker Street. I wanted to see her as a kind of joke.